You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to my last guest and co-host, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. You can find his fine work Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. His show is called Amicus. I check it out on Saturday when I'm doing my household chores. I recommend you check it out as well. Thank you to Jim for being with me. As we handled some breaking news, we have yet again planes in the air taking people to South Sudan in apparent clear violation of multiple court orders. We'll continue to try to keep you up to date on developments as they unfold in that bit of breaking news. I am very pleased to now bring on with me my very special next guest. His name is Lowell Barrington. He's an associate professor in the Department of Political Science at one of my alma maters, Marquette University. His teaching and research focus on post-communist politics, ethnicity, nationalism, and democratization. He's received research grants from the National Science Foundation and the National Council for Eurasian and East European Research, and he is also a research affiliate with UW-Madison Center for Russia, East Europe, and Central Asia. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Professor Barrington. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Maggie. It's good to be back.
To set the stage here, I had a couple of my fine producers put together what I think we can call a montage of things Trump has said about the Russia-Ukraine conflict to level set and to place the two-hour phone call between President Trump and Vladimir Putin that occurred yesterday in context. It's a little long, Professor Barrington, but I thought it's important to know where we have been with President Trump's view of the Ukraine-Russia conflict and where we stand now, to contrast those two competing versions of the conflict that have come from this administration. With that, Jacob, let's take a listen. This is Donald Trump over the last couple of months on the Ukraine-Russia conflict.
If I'm president, I will have that war settled in one day, 24 hours.
Before I even arrive at the Oval Office, I will have the disastrous war between Russia and Ukraine settled. I would get a settlement in 24 hours.
That is a war that's dying to be settled. I will get it settled before I even become president.
And within 24 hours, that war will be settled. It'll be over.
I will get it solved in rapid order, and it will take me no longer than one day.
I'm going to try, and I think I can, get it ended as president-elect. In other words, before I even take over the White House.
We're having very serious discussions about that war, trying to get it ended with Russia.
And I think we're on the way to getting peace. I think President Putin wants peace, and President Zelensky wants peace, and I want peace.
Maybe Russia will give up a lot. Maybe they won't. And it's all dependent on what is going to happen. The negotiation really hasn't started.
And I think I have the power to end this war. And I think it's going very well. But today I heard, oh, well, we weren't invited. Well, you've been there for 3 years. You should have ended it 3 years. You should have never started it. You could have made a deal.
If you didn't have our military equipment,
if you didn't have
our military equipment, this war would have been over in 2 weeks.
In three days. I heard it from Putin. In 3 days. This is something
maybe
new.
Less.
In 2 weeks.
Okay. It's going to be a very hard thing to do business like this.
Please,
you're running
Mr.
low
President.
On soldiers. It would be a damn good
Mr.
thing.
And
then you tell us, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. I want to go, and I want this. But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight it out.
As a candidate, you said you would have this war settled in 24 hours.
Well, I was being a little bit sarcastic when I said that. What I really mean is I'd like to get it settled.
Okay, Professor Barrington, a lot there. What I think is worthy of note, first of all, I want to, again, thank you for joining us. You came on the show initially on March 3rd, which was the Monday after, and we heard some of the sound from what can be described as a disastrous meeting between President Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky, president of Ukraine, along with J.D. Vance in the Oval Office. Here's what I find curious, and I'd like to get your take on this, Professor. Donald Trump, throughout the campaign, throughout the first months of his presidency, centered himself, put himself forward as the only person, as the person without whom there can be no peace settlement between Ukraine and Russia. Again, placing himself really at the center of that. It seems that his tune has changed following his call with Vladimir Putin yesterday. Professor Barrington, do you detect a change in the Trump administration's approach to the Ukraine-Russia conflict and the U.S.'s role in brokering a peace? It seems to be that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are priming the pump to simply walk away.
I think that's fair. I think the statement that President Trump made toward the end of that a long list of slightly to a lot painful statements from him was that he really wants to get this done. And I think that part is true. I think his goal of wanting to look good and wanting an agreement, I think, is still there. I will absolutely agree with you that I think that the meeting with Zelensky and then more recently, again, this sort of suggestion that if this doesn't come together quickly, the U.S. may just back out of the effort, I think is a change. And it's one that, again, is music to Putin's ears, right? I mean, that sometimes in negotiations, there's a kind of bluff you make, which is I'm going to walk away. The problem with that for Putin, it would be a really strange bluff for Trump to make because that only benefits him in delaying things longer. And he thinks, helping kind of squeeze Ukraine further in this.
Yeah, that's what, to be blunt, Professor Barrington, that's what concerns me so greatly about this about face, for lack of a better term. Donald Trump on Truthy Social yesterday after the call, his post included this: the conditions for a ceasefire will be negotiated between the two parties as it can only be, because they know the details of a negotiation that nobody else would be aware of. That if Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are saying to Vladimir Putin, Volodymyr Zelensky, and the world, listen, you two figure it out. Otherwise, the United States is going to walk away from its support of Ukraine. I fear takes any possible pressure on Russia and it wipes it away. Why would Russia want to have or agree to any ceasefire if the U.S. is saying, well, we're going to stop supporting Ukraine, we're backing away from this entire conflict? Why? What incentive is there, if any, for Russia to negotiate any sort of ceasefire or a more lasting, stable, durable peace resolution with Ukraine?
Right. The only thing that would make Putin think about that at this point would be a string of losses on the battlefield, in a way. And I would add, I mean, walking away is really bad. It's a terrible signal. And by the way, it's very interesting, maybe not surprising, but interesting that Europe has been mentioned nowhere in any of these conversations, right, by the U.S., at least in terms of helping find a solution to this. So it's really not about finding a solution. It's about getting credit for a solution. But in a way, walking away changes things less than I think some people might think, because there hasn't been, I mean, we haven't put pressure as an American government on Putin throughout this process since inauguration. So, and this is a point, again, it's not lost on people. Europe's foreign policy chief for the European Union basically talked about how we haven't seen any kind of pressure on Russia from the talks. Dan Quayle, of all people, talked about the fact that, you know, Trump hasn't put any pressure on Putin, and he doesn't understand why. And if you want leverage, you have to actually pressure someone to use the leverage.
Right.
So I think, you know, even to the point of saying we're going to walk away, which, again, I agree with you, is not a good thing. And it's a bad signal about kind of the you're on your own nature of it, although Europe, again, would disagree with that. But I do think in a way we've not been putting pressure on Russia from the start, really, in the last few months.
Well, then let me turn and pivot and ask you a different question. Would it be fair to say that starting on January 20th with the inauguration of Donald Trump, that all meaningful leverage against Vladimir Putin to come to any kind of ceasefire in effect evaporated, that Donald Trump has signaled in subtle and not so subtle ways that really the U.S. is not going to bring to bear any of its powers in a meaningful, substantive way to bring a resolution to this conflict. And in fact, that the U.S. actions under the Trump administration will be and will inure to Russia's benefit in all material ways.
Well, the Russian government certainly sees it that way. And I would note that the reaction in the Russian media to the phone call was a celebratory one. I mean, they thought it was a huge win for Russia at the end of the day that they had this phone call. And essentially, it looked like Putin could just dismiss Trump without any, you know, punishment for doing that. I mean, I would push back a little bit on the idea that it was guaranteed that we wouldn't have leverage. I think there's a bit of that only Nixon can go to China kind of theory here that maybe Trump would have surprised us and of all people actually would have put pressure on Putin. And there's hints of that, right? Like he starts to kind of publicly state that he's a little bit suspicious of Putin's intentions sometimes, you know, things like that, right? But you're right, he's not acted on that. So Europe has put new sanctions on. We refuse to do that. And so at kind of every step, when there was an opportunity to really kind of push Russia, we haven't done that. But again, those are kind of choices. I'm not sure it was predetermined. It was just consistent with his odd infatuation with Putin.
Yeah, it seems to me beyond sort of the performative lip service that Trump has given, that it was sort of the expectation from the Trump camp on January 20th was, well, okay, we'll take a victory lap on this after they all fall in line at Donald Trump's urging. Oh, wait, foreign policy might be difficult and hard and require planned out leverage and detailed negotiations over a period of time. Oh, well, we don't have either the will or the attention span or the aptitude for that. What concerned me most as you tipped your hat to Professor Barrington coming out of the phone call yesterday was precisely the fact that it seemed to me that Vladimir Putin told Donald Trump to butt out, that there is no role for the United States to play at the negotiating table. And Donald Trump said, okay, fine, Vlad, we'll butt out now. Let me know when I can come play in the sandbox again. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion. We're going to put Professor Barrington on hold for a moment because, of course, we have newly announced Supreme Court candidate, Judge Appeals Court Judge Chris Taylor joining us. Thank you to Professor Barrington, who's going to hang out. We're going to pick up with Professor Barrington at the end of the hour, bring on Judge Taylor next. We're going to discuss with Professor Barrington, is Donald Trump signaling his weakness to America's enemies based on his mishandling of the Ukraine-Russia conflict? And of course, when we come back, Judge Taylor joins us to discuss her newly announced campaign for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We've got the first live interview, the exclusive, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Not Cecilia. It's Judge Chris Taylor. She's running for Supreme Court. We've got her first live interview right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, 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 Judge Chris Taylor. So excited to have you. How are you doing? Big, exciting day today with the announcement.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. I'm really excited. I have really, really anticipated this day and announcing my candidacy for the state Supreme Court. And I'm really heartened by all the support that I've received. But really, what this race is about the people of Wisconsin and the kind of justice they deserve on the state Supreme Court. You know, someone who puts them first and not the big special interests and the billionaires. It's really government's about the people of the state of Wisconsin, and that's the kind of judge I am, and that's the kind of justice I would be.
I want to ask you, this last race was so contentious, as was the Supreme Court race before it. More money, more mudslinging. It has gotten so fraught. Why on God's green earth would you want to get into this kind of what is some brass-knuckled partisan, seemingly more and more partisan every cycle when we've got Supreme Court justices up for election. Why throw your hat in the ring? Why subject yourself to what will be a very long campaign?
Well, look, Maggie, I have really focused my entire 30-year legal career as an attorney, as a legislator, and as a judge on protecting people's freedoms, protecting people's rights. I want to continue to do that kind of work as a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. My priority as a judge is that Wisconsinites get access to justice in the fairest, most impartial, most independent way possible. You know, ever since I was a little kid, a little girl, I really saw that the law is a way to improve people's lives. And all I've wanted to ever be was an attorney. And I dreamt of being a judge because I thought you could just do so much good for people. So I'm really committed to that. I really think government needs to work for the people of Wisconsin. The judiciary needs to be about the people of this state. And, you know, I'm excited to do it. I know it's a long road, but I have great faith and confidence in Wisconsinites, and I'm just really heartened by all the support that I've received so far.
I wanted to ask you, as you mentioned, Judge Taylor, you've been a Democratic legislator. You were a lawyer for Planned Parenthood. You also served as their policy director. And I asked soon to be sworn in Justice Crawford, now Judge Crawford, the same question when she was running. How do you assure Wisconsin voters that you can set aside your prior advocacy for a particular organization and set of issues, and as a Democratic legislator, to be an apolitical jurist on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
Well, Maggie, look, I've been a judge now for 5 years. I've been a circuit court judge, and now I'm on the Court of Appeals, and I understand the difference between a legislator and a judge. As a judge, I look at the law, I apply the law to the facts of the case, and I try to do it in the most fair way possible so people are heard, so people feel like they are getting justice, so people feel like it's a fair process. So that's what I've done for 5 years. It's just a different role. But I have to say, being a legislator is a great, great advantage to me as a judge. I understand the legislative process, a lot of what we do, a lot of what I do as a judge, a lot about what judges do is interpret the law. We have to know legislative intent. We have to look at statutes very closely. So I really think it makes me a unique candidate in that way. I have looked at the law from so many different angles. As an attorney, I was in private practice the first 6 years of being in my legal career, so I've also been in private practice. And then as you acknowledge, going over to Planned Parenthood and doing law and policy for them, then in the legislature, being a circuit court judge where people were in front of me every single day, and now at the Court of Appeals, I just have a really unique background and an experience that really has taught me that people are the center of the laws. People are what matters. So every case I decide, I'm always thinking about who's this going to impact, who's this going to affect. And I'm proud of the things I've worked on. I think that the values that I have are reflected and are held throughout the state of Wisconsin. I don't think it's at all unusual to feel that women and families should make their own personal and private health care decisions. I agree with the state Supreme Court's decision that we had unfair maps that discounted people's votes. These are values that I hold very, very, very dear to me. But I have shown how independent I can be. I was independent in the legislature. I worked with Democrats, Republicans. I didn't always agree with everything, but I'll tell you, I have always been committed to working out problems, to reaching across to other people who may not see things exactly how I do, and coming up with solutions to people's problems. And that's what government really should be. Certainly, that's what the judiciary should be. That's what we do every single day.
Folks, that is current sitting Wisconsin Appeals Court Judge Chris Taylor, now newly announced candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. We've got about 30 seconds left, Judge. Why don't you tell the people of Wisconsin, who may be the ones to elect you, something about you that they don't know and can't find on your campaign website, chrisforjustice.com.
Okay, let's see. I love dogs.
She loves dogs. I love dogs too.
I have a black Labrador named Ollie.
Judge, we're going to have to get your Ollie and my Finny together. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Come back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to Appeals Court Judge Chris Taylor joining me here on the Civic Media Radio Network for her first live interview, an exclusive, after announcing today she will be facing off in 2026 against sitting Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley. That is going to be yet another barn burner with Wisconsin at the center of the political universe. But broadening our scope back out a wee bit to discuss world affairs, we are being rejoined by Marquette University Associate Professor of Political Science, Lowell Barrington. Professor Barrington, first of all, thank you. Thank you for your patience and understanding as we navigate the waters of live radio this afternoon. Lots of breaking news today, sir. But I wanted to pick back up where we left off before we spoke with Judge Taylor. And that is what concerns me so much about what occurred during the two-hour phone call yesterday between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump is that for months, Donald Trump told us he was going to be the arbiter of peace, that he was central to bringing about a Ukraine-Russia ceasefire and ultimately a durable peace. But it appears to me, and especially in the readout and the coverage of the call from the Russian press, from the competing readouts that both President Putin and President Trump gave, that effectively Vladimir Putin told Donald Trump to butt out, that this was a matter for Ukraine and Russia to negotiate and decide. And Donald Trump said, okay, Vlad, I'm going to do just that. Is Donald Trump really signaling a certain degree of weakness, an inability to navigate these very fraught relations? Is he demonstrating to the world that he really doesn't have either the appetite or the acumen to apply pressure to world leaders in these kinds of conflicts to bring about resolutions?
Well, first of all, let me mention that no problem having me wait for the conversation about state judicial politics, whether politics is global or statewide, all levels of politics affect people's lives. So that was a fun conversation for me to listen to. I think that it's fair to question his understanding or kind of depth of interest in global affairs. It's not something in his first term that was, you know, his strong suit. I do think, again, there's something about his relationship with Putin that's a particularly kind of interesting relationship, and his willingness to not just listen to Putin a bit, but to actually echo points that Putin makes. And I think if, you know, if we're thinking about what would be concerning in terms of U.S. security when our adversaries are kind of watching this happen, I think that idea, for example, I mean, and Putin said it the other day, that for Russia, the quote-unquote root cause of the conflict with Ukraine was NATO expansion. And we've had President Trump actually kind of echo this idea that NATO expansion, in fact, was a big cause of the war. And so I think that that's what concerns me as much as anything, is that it would almost be better for him not to be involved in some ways than to be involved and echo Putin's talking points.
Fascinating. Better for Trump to not be involved, to step back from this, to not have the world press listening to him, effectively trumpeting disinformation points coming out of the Kremlin. Stunning. I wanted to take a listen to, this is Vice President Vance, I believe yesterday on Air Force One. Let's take a listen to what J.D. Vance had to say. This is Cut 20.
There is fundamental mistrust between Russia and the West. It's one of the things the president thinks is frankly stupid, that we should be able to move beyond the mistakes that have been made in the past, but that takes two to tango. I know the president's willing to do that, but if Russia's not willing to do that, then we're eventually just gonna have to say, this is not our war, it's Joe Biden's war, it's Vladimir Putin's war, it's not our war. We're gonna try to end it, but if we can't end it, we're eventually gonna say, you know what, that was worth a try, but we're not doing it anymore.
There's quite a bit there. I wanted to start, and that sound came to mind, Professor Barrington, because of where Vice President Vance begins in that cut, where he says, you know, this fundamental lack of trust, and the president thinks that's stupid, meaning the lack of trust between the United States and Russia. And the president's willing to trust Russia, but if Vladimir Putin isn't willing to trust us, well, it takes two to tango. Is that just itself a stupid comment, a naive one, Professor Barrington? I mean, at what point in time has Vladimir Putin demonstrated himself to be trustworthy vis-a-vis foreign relations, Crimea, Ukraine, or his dealings with Western Europe or the United States in any way, shape, or form? I'm stymied by what the vice president articulated there.
Well, it is true what he started with, which is that there has been a fundamental mistrust between Russia and the West for a long time. The question is sort of what's driven that mistrust and what the solutions might be to help overcome it. I think that one of the real issues here is I have a sense that neither President Trump nor J.D. Vance probably understand kind of the complexities of Putin. I think they think he's a completely rational deal maker, kind of like Trump, not really very ideological, just, you know, really wants to think strategically, and therefore you should be able to hammer out a deal and get things resolved. And I think that's part of our misunderstanding in general in the U.S. about Putin. It's people tend to either be in the camp of he's this crazy Russian nationalist, hothead, you know, can't work with him because of that, or it's this he's this completely strategic person who knows how to manipulate everyone and he doesn't really have any ideological anchors. And it's really a little bit of both. He's certainly strategic at times, but there are some core things he really believes in. And one of those is there is a real belief that NATO expansion was an existential threat to Russian security. I believe that he believes that deeply. I believe that he believes as well that the U.S. and Europe harmed Russia significantly in the 1990s when Boris Yeltsin was president and before Putin was on the center stage. And that in some ways, I think he thinks it was fairly intentional on our part. I'm not sure I agree with that part, but again, he believes these kinds of things about the West. So to think that he will just stop having any kind of mistrust because of who the president is, again, is missing some things that I think, at least in him, are quite deep. And when it comes to Ukraine, there's an added depth to this. And again, I think I might have talked about this with you last time, too, that I don't know exactly how deep of a belief this is for Putin, but I think it's pretty deep, which is that this concept that Russians and Ukrainians are really one people, and that in a way kind of Ukrainians just went off the rails of Russian identity and it's kind of their fault and they just need to be brought back under the wing of Russian culture and control and that everything will be fine. I think it's that. But then there's also this strategic piece, which is that Putin really desperately wants Ukraine to be unstable and to be a kind of failure at democracy, as opposed to at least what it had been before the war, which was a functioning democracy, if not a perfect one. So again, I think it's really, Putin is complicated. And so to deal with him, we need people who themselves walk into these situations and events with a deep understanding of nuance and complexity. And I don't know that that's what we're getting, at least in the last couple months.
We're talking with Marquette University Associate Professor of Political Science, Lowell Barrington. You raise a really fascinating point, Professor, about the understanding Putin as someone who observed Yeltsin's Russia and observed the fall of the Soviet Union, the establishment of fledgling and ultimately somewhat functional democracies in former Soviet republics, and that part of his agenda vis-a-vis Ukraine is to crush a fledgling functional democracy, that is a motivator, and that the concern, Putin's concern over Ukrainian admission to NATO relates to that. It would strengthen Ukraine as an independent, functional democracy. One of the things that stands out to me is not just some of the lack of nuance or understanding or the ultimate agenda here, is the lack of anyone within the Republican Party that is bringing that truth to Vice President Vance and President Trump. As you survey the landscape, are there truth tellers that remain on Capitol Hill or in the White House to help inform the president to say stepping away and washing your hands of Ukraine is not actually going to advance U.S. security interests, to remind the president and vice president of these nuances, of these broader, long-standing strategic foundational aims that Vladimir Putin has? Who's the truth teller?
This is an interesting question, because I think in the area of foreign policy, we have typically seen the greatest levels of agreement and cooperation across party lines in the United States. And I think one of the things that's been going on here is not that people have themselves radically altered their position in the Republican Party in terms of their own personal beliefs. It's the concern of voicing those beliefs. And in particular, the really significant move in the area of intelligence in the United States, meaning sort of security intelligence, right, the kind of intelligence briefings that President Trump would get, the move toward people who are Trump loyalists to hold those positions as opposed to people whose lives have been spent in their career working on these kinds of issues, I think that's something that has made things even worse. So that if you're, even if you're willing to say something a little bit about this, you're now countered not just by President Trump and the fear of being primary and everything that comes with that, whether it's domestic politics or foreign policy, you know, opposition to Trump, but you're countered now by the intelligence community as well, in a way that we did not see nearly to the same extent in the first Trump term.
Deeply concerning, to say the very least. Let's zoom out even further. If world leaders, especially countries that are adversaries of the United States, are able to read the media accounts, as well as you and I, Professor Barrington, about the fact that there has been a loyalist vetting process within key intelligence agency and national security positions, that there doesn't seem to be a willingness to say to the President of the United States what needs to be said, to tell him the truth when it comes to these key national security questions, whether it be Ukraine and Russia, whether it be Iran, the Mideast, et cetera. What does that say? What are our adversaries, what are our enemies, to be blunt, thinking is happening within the United States national security apparatus? Or do they view it potentially as no one minding the store?
Well, I think what they think is there's a door that's open to do what Putin has done and other former adversaries have done, which is flatter the president and offer him gifts and try to get on good terms with him, and that can lead to foreign policy changes.
Our thanks to Professor Lowell Barrington, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. My closing thoughts when we return.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to Marquette University Associate Professor of Political Science, Lowell Barrington, a two-time guest here on The Maggie Dawn Show. We're definitely going to have him back. I just wanted to share with you this tidbit. I was chatting with Lowell while we were in commercial. We are definitely going to have him back. But he mentioned something that I think is really important to repeat, and that is that it's his assessment that President Trump, I think, by all accounts, believes the things that Vladimir Putin says to him. He believes that they're true. And I find that to just be a stunning amount of naivete. And it is a bit of naivete that I will just say I have witnessed in dealings with people who have only been surrounded by sycophants for their entire life, meaning extraordinarily wealthy and extraordinarily powerful people. And here's why. When you are constantly surrounded by yes men and women and sycophants and obsequiousness, and the world tends to conform itself, or at least your perception of the world tends to conform itself to your desires and wishes, and people tell you what you want to hear, you tend to think they're all telling the truth all the time, wouldn't you? Right? That these patterns over a lifetime have their own bias that begins to infect the person who is that power center, that center of wealth and power. And it leads people that live in those sorts of bubbles to lose touch with reality here on Earth One, as it were. And you tend to begin to think that not only are you all powerful, but that you are all seeing, and that your discernment of people, of situations, your read on things is always correct, that your perception and your judgments, your decisions are infallible. One of the things that I think we all should fear in ourselves and in our leaders is a belief in our own infallibility. Because once we decide that our judgments, our discernment, our perceptions are infallible, it's not far to then reach a place where those that object or disagree are labeled evil and bad and not worthy of any respect. It's not far to get to a place where you believe those snake oil salesmen. This infallibility problem, this belief in his own infallibility, in his own completely misguided perceptions, Donald Trump's belief that he sees everything, that he is all-knowing, that his judgments are perfect. It's not like a guy running a hedge fund and he makes a bad investment call because he only listens to himself and loses some really, really, really rich people their money. Donald Trump's, at base, naive arrogance, his naive belief in his own infallibility, is what is placing our country, our troops, our way of life, and our values at risk every day. The man's naive arrogance in his own infallibility, his belief in that, is leading him to think that Vladimir Putin isn't lying to him, that he couldn't lie to him, and that if he was lying to him, he would, of course, know. And doesn't take a PhD in political science to know that Vladimir Putin lies. He lies a lot. So I don't know what to make of all of this over these past few days, except that I think we're all constantly reminded that we need to approach politics with a certain sense of humility, with a certain baseline thought that, hey, what if I'm wrong? what risks to my values, to our core values, to our democracy are posed if I'm wrong? To me, thinking of those things and asking those kinds of questions are what distinguishes good leaders, great leaders, from those that lead us to disaster, to abandonment of values. So what do I hope coming out of the last few days? Well, I hope that people who may see the world in terms of us and them, of my team and your team and winning at all costs, begin to understand that when it comes to American baseline principles, our most fundamental values, concepts of habeas corpus and due process, there aren't teams. There isn't us and them. There's just all of us together in one of the world's longest experiments in democracy. And if, in the end, we are willing to give away things like due process, if we're willing to wave away habeas corpus, or simply reserve those rights for some of us, but not all of us, in the end, our humble democracy experiment will fail. And it is up to each and every one of us to stand up and to say, when it comes to these base principles, there's only one team. The American team, a team that stands for democracy. That's going to do it for me. Pete Schwab is up next with Nightlight. Keep it locked. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.